You're listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Welcome back to the first new episode for 2022. Let's hope this year is less of a COVID dumpster fire than the last 2 years. If you're a long-time listener, welcome back. You may have noticed a slight change to the start of the show. I have ADHD, so my brain likes to change things up and keep things interesting. Also, this year, we are going to deep dive into what the F it means to be a young cancer survivor. Young cancer survivors are generally thought to be like 15 to 40, but I think it should be a little bit older, up into the 40s, 45s when you're diagnosed. I was 37 when I was diagnosed, and many of us will know there is so much information about cancer treatment while you're in it, support, what you can do and what you can expect. But there is no lovely pamphlet that describes what you can expect once treatment ends and how do you piece your life back together. I think that when you're younger, when you're diagnosed, you face quite different challenges than if you're a little bit older. Don't get me wrong, cancer is a shit show whenever you get it. I just wanted to explore this deeper. I wanted to talk to other people about what has life been like for them after their cancer diagnosis. How have they gone back to work? How has it impacted their relationships? So this year, there'll be 2 new episodes a month, and we'll be covering topics from relationships, body image, mental health, facing incurable cancer as a younger person, and so much more. I have so many cool things lined up for this year. So join me as we explore what on earth is young survivorship in 2022. Survivorship doesn't only apply to the person diagnosed with cancer. So I'm also going to be talking to caregivers and partners and family members about their experiences. Today's guest is a fellow podcaster, sewing enthusiast, and has faced both of her parents going through major illnesses since 2022. Ada Chen is one of the hosts of the Asian Sewers Collective podcast and the founder of Chuan Skincare. In 2022, her father got COVID and died shortly after. In 2021, her mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. We sat down at the end of last year to talk about her most challenging time in life and what she has learned about being a caregiver. This is Ada's story.
So about a month after I left my job, I got a call from my cousin, and I was walking back from doing some errands, and I let it go to voicemail, and then she kept calling me again. And then I was getting calls from a phone number in that area, and I was like, I don't know. So I picked it up. And my dad had been taken to the hospital because he was found down in his apartment. And they weren't sure how long he had been down, but basically my cousin had dropped off groceries and then hadn't heard from him in 2 days. And her mom, who lives with her, my dad's older sister, also was like worried they hadn't heard from him. And he had Parkinson's. He was diagnosed in 2013, 2014, and he was still managing on his own, actually. But, you know, the number one reason for Parkinson's patients passing is that they fall and something happens. And so he had fallen, which was our kind of worst fear. And he was taken to the emergency room. And since my parents are divorced, and so I'm the eldest, I was the emergency contact. It was me. And luckily I wasn't working, because had I been working full-time, I don't think I would have been able to navigate or manage. And they don't really know. I still don't have clarity. There were theories about it was a stroke, it was a heart attack, but he was down for a long enough time that he had lost a lot of motor function, because when a Parkinson's patient doesn't have their meds for movement for long enough out and it's out of their system, they need to be on it for a long time and then do rehab to kind of relearn some of those skills. So he was in and out of the hospital for a good 4 or 5 months until he was permanently transferred to a nursing facility. And because of COVID, we weren't allowed to go into anything. So they were like, don't come. You're going to have to wait outside in the parking lot. Don't do this. Don't do that. And no vaccines at the time. And it was very scary. And so the best we could do was get FaceTimes with him if the nurses weren't busy, and the nurses were busy. And thankfully, the entire time he was in the hospital, in and out, and in the facility, he didn't have COVID, which was just super lucky on our part that in his state of decline or bad health, that, you know, a lot of things were not going well in his body. And so it was like a gradual decline. But in the facility that he was in, he was doing rehab, PT, OT, all the therapies that you could do, besides actually talking to a therapist, doing all those. And I would call and talk to the doctors and the nurses all the time. And so I was managing all of that for the majority of 2020. At the end of 2020, they actually assigned in the facility a nurse to be in charge of COVID testing and all the stuff, because they had figured out testing at that point. So I had weekly calls with her. She's a fantastic human, super empathetic, could understand why we were all struggling. And she basically, we were on this whole like mitigation navigation strategy from afar too, because I, again, wasn't living there, couldn't go inside anyways. So the few times I went back, which was when people weren't really flying yet, and it was a whole weird thing of like double masking. Do I wear lab goggles on the plane? What do I do? And we would go back and like wait outside or drop things off from outside and thank the staff. And we got the call, I think it was Christmas Eve. It was around Christmas that his roommate had tested positive for COVID in the facility, and so did he. And given the health state that he was in, not able to move on his own, and his kidney function was not great, and his body was just not doing well, They were like, we're going to try to keep him here in our COVID ward for as long as possible and help him get better. But if we have to, we will have to bring him to a hospital. And if you recall, the winter in the US was pretty bad. And a few days later, we still couldn't go inside. So a few days later, he wasn't getting better. And so the doctor very tearfully called us like New Year's Day. It was like, you need to let him go. We have to send him to the hospital. You need to let him go. And so this was in January. And over the summer, when I had been caregiving for him, it was so stressful that my skin was freaking out. And this sounds like a hard writer, but I swear it's all related. And my skin was freaking out because I wasn't sleeping well. I wasn't eating well. I was drinking copious amounts of wine to help go. You know, not being able to go in and being on the phone all the time. And the only solution I found was mixing my own clay masks. And I had been mixing some of my own skincare and natural products for a while, for a few years before that, but never actually thought anything of it. And I found that I couldn't find anything that I like wanted that met my needs, that wasn't full of random preservatives or chemicals. And so my dad had always been like that too. Like, he used to have to take 6 to 8 pills a day, which is nothing compared to chemo pre-meds, but 6 to 8 pills a day when you're already having motor function difficulties and annoyed, he would have to take those every day so that he could function. And even then, he didn't like them. So he was constantly fighting with doctors, like, can I take fewer? And they'd be like, then you won't be able to move. So it was like this constant struggle. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to be over medicating my skin, because the skin is the largest organ on your body. And so I kind of went down this natural route and realized that there was like this whole world that I think not enough people explore. And I was like, let's see if some of my friends knew what I was doing. And I was like, would you buy this? And they were like, yeah, we would buy this. And so over the summer, I finessed the recipe or the formula, and then started selling it right around the end of November. Had a decent holiday season, and then crammed with Dad has COVID, he's not going to make it. And so I kind of gotten my business off to start, inspired by my experience with him. And then also because he had previously, when I was in high school, wanted to start his own business. And I wrote the business plans for him. And so I always knew he had an entrepreneurial streak. It was just for safety reasons, of like financial safety, that he kept his job for so long. And so he never got to realize that. And I knew that's where I got my entrepreneurial streak. And so I was like, coming up with a name for this brand, I don't know. And then I was like, why don't I name it after my dad? Because it all came from that experience of caregiving for him. And it helps that his middle name, Chuan, Chuan, is in traditional Chinese. So both my parents are from Taiwan. The character is made up of two characters, actually. And so the character on top is like white or bright. And then the character on the bottom is water, and water or bright water is what you add to clay masks to make them work. And I was like, I was just sitting around my house, kind of puttering around. And then I had this like realization. And so I asked my sister, Dad can't respond right now, but do you think this is okay? She was like, yeah, go for it. I mean, I think he would appreciate that you're doing something on your own and trying to do the thing. And so it was all a confluence of events and things that happened that resulted in me starting this brand and starting to work on it and then taking a break from it shortly thereafter to take care of him in his last days and lay him to rest. And it was definitely a consideration when I came back to it in February of this year.
Yeah. Were you able to be with him in person at all, or was this all done remotely?
So the interesting thing is I got engaged in July. And when they were afraid that he wasn't making enough progress with therapy stuff, but he hadn't caught COVID yet, I'd ask them, like, can we do a shotgun wedding outside the window of the facility? Because up to that point, we saw him through the screen and then once in person. And we were PPE'd to the max. And we were only allowed in because the doctor understood that my sister and I had flown in and we hadn't been able to see him. And I think something about us reminded him of his daughters. And so he let us in PPE to the max and everyone was super safe. And that was the last time we got to see him in person, like in the same room. When we got the call to come back, his last week, he was sent to the hospital. The hospital asked us if we would like to intubate him. And we understood that the chances of survival with someone in his state were very low on intubation. And we didn't think that was something he wanted. So we decided to opt for no. And we put him in hospice care. And the hospice care team actually said, he doesn't have to die in a hospital. That was his biggest fear. You can bring him back to the nursing facility if they'll have him, and we can do hospice care there. And so he got to be in the hospice care facility for his last 36 hours. I'm a little fuzzy on it because it was a lot. And we saw him, we were cleaning out his apartment, preparing, and we got to go be outside his window because previously his room hadn't been in a window that faced outside. But when they moved him back, they moved him to a room with a window because they knew they couldn't let us in, but he could be at a window. So he was in his room by himself with the big window open. We had to call them from the side of the building. Hi, we think we know which room, but all the windows are down. So they opened it for us and we got to stand outside for about an hour or two. We thought we still had a day or two left with him. And so, you know, we hung out outside his window for about like an hour or two and it was getting cold. And so we said, okay, like sleep well tonight. We know the morphine's going to kick in. We'll be back tomorrow morning. And I think he must have known that we were outside, even though he was out of it. And we left him in the room. And then a few hours later, got the call. And worst day of my life by far. But yeah, that was January 6th, the day of the Capitol invasion too. Can't escape that.
Jesus.
Yeah. We were laughing about it in the morning while we were cleaning his apartment. We're like, what the heck is going on here? And had no idea that was how our day was going to end.
Oh my God. It's just, I feel like I've been looking at, I wanted to give some sort of reference or either for New Zealand listeners or maybe if they're in Australia. So Denver to California is about the same as going from one tip of New Zealand to the next. And so it would be like if your loved one, if you lived in Northland and your loved one was in Invercargill, and at the moment we can't really travel. And
right.
So that's that kind of point of reference for anyone who might be listening, is trying to caregive for your loved one from that huge distance when you can't get to them. And I just, God, I think it's,
and you're doing it all by phone and FaceTime. And also, I don't know how the healthcare workers in New Zealand have been, but the healthcare workers in the US are fairly burned out at this point. Like even at that point, and that was almost a year ago, they were all so tired and so exhausted. And so everything that we were doing, my sister and I would take turns every other week or so, and we would just send good, like baked goods or food to the nursing facility, because we knew that these folks, like, if we couldn't be there, they had to be there. That is their job. And that is a critical, essential job. And so we were like, we're going to try to make this as good as possible for you because we can't physically be there and you're the one with him in the room. And I definitely think that for anybody caregiving, if your parent, loved one, whoever is in a facility and you can't go in, sending treats to the staff works. They definitely appreciate it. Don't send just cupcakes and cookies. Send things that they will actually enjoy and are somewhat healthy, because a lot of people just send them high processed sugar stuff, which is great occasionally. But if you are getting that every single day, there's no way you're really eating it. Like, it's all this thing. It's the same, to be honest, as what I see in my mom's chemo infusion center. A lot of people send donuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's such an important point. Oh God, my heart ached for you and your sister when you were talking about that process with your dad, because I just think this is the carnage of a pandemic, is that we can't be with our loved ones if we need to be. A lot of us can't. It's the same. New Zealand is just starting to, I think, get what you guys have. We had the benefit of isolation for a long time, and now we have Delta, and Delta is a different ball game. And so there are a lot of people that just, you know, they can't, that we can't leave Auckland. And it's really sad. And I think death and major illness and that's in caregiving, for so long it has been about being in person and being with your parent or being with your friend. And when you take that part out of it, it must have been, I don't know, devastating.
It's a weird spot to be in. And because we could only be back for a certain amount of time, but we didn't live there anymore, like navigating who to stay with and who was comfortable, to be honest, like with us staying in their house when we were there. We were very lucky. Yeah. One of my best friends from university lived there and had a spare room and let us crash there for a bit, but her mom's also immunocompromised. And so we had to be very careful. We used a separate entrance and everything. And we realized that wasn't the best setup for anybody. And so luckily another really good friend from high school who lived there let us crash with her. She was much more open and understanding. And I think it also helped that my dad was part of her church and they were kind of all in the same circle. And she was just so, I do not think I would have made it through that time without her. And she knows this, but that is something that I cannot ever repay her enough for. When you are in a time of need and crisis, basically, and somebody opens up their home to you for weeks on end, we had no idea how long we could be there. When we would go back for, like, you know, first we cleaned up his apartment to make sure there wasn't molding food in the refrigerator. We didn't know how long he was going to be out. So we cleaned it up just to know where things were, because we figured if he ever came home, it would be a different setup. He would need full-time health aid help. We also took care of his personal affairs. And let me tell you, getting into like banks and stuff when things are locked down is, on top of the way that it's set up in the US being completely backwards. Wow. And his car lease expired while he was in the facility. And I was like, is someone going to question why somebody else is returning this car? Turns out, no, they probably should.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was all these sorts of weird things that you can't ever predict happening or having to deal with. And it was definitely like a learning experience and kind of weird, which is why, like, now I'm like, having been through the ringer and been through all that. And even the funeral planning process was different and weird because of COVID. First of all, funeral homes were slammed.
Oh.
Second of all, we had to do everything else. I'm grateful. I'm actually very grateful we found a funeral home that would let us have a service with his body. They still had to have us completely outside under a tent, and he had to be under plexiglass.
Wow.
And I was like, COVID spread by like breathing. He's not breathing. And it was weird to say goodbye in that way, in that you're processing all this grief and trauma and it's strange. And then you're like, but the plexiglass, how's that work? And they like did a live stream to my extended family who couldn't be there because a lot of our extended family is still in Taiwan. And Taiwan, like New Zealand, just had a strict lockdown. Like, just even now, I think it's even stricter. And they could not comprehend, I think, what was happening in the US a bit. And so there was like a little bit of trying to explain, but not really being able to. Because how do you convey? I can't go inside. I can't touch him. There's no plexiglass. There's plexiglass everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone is masked outside, which, you know, yes, masks. Wear a mask. But also just what is going on and how much PPE do I have to have on? Nobody knew what was going on. And so if I can save anyone else from that experience, or at least make it a little better, that is, I think, something I'll carry with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And it really strikes me because I've spoken to a woman who is a fellow breast cancer survivor, but she's also a funeral celebrant, or she runs a funeral home in the top of the South Island here. And it was really interesting talking to her about death, because I think it's a hard one when you've had cancer or you're going through it with yourself or someone else to talk around that, because no one wants to kind of broach that subject. And so talking to her about that process, and from that conversation, what I really stuck with me was, yeah, of being with your loved one. Sometimes people with their children might dress them or like brush their hair, all of that very physical stuff that has now is, no, you in some places just cannot do that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of funeral workers who have burned out here. And I, since going through this, have delved into that world to understand it better, I think, because a lot of it is still rooted in a lot of old timey practices and hasn't caught up with the 21st century. The whole time we were like, why do we have to call you to book a funeral? There's this thing called the internet. My sister and I, being very millennial, and we were just like, what, this doesn't make any sense. How is anybody managing any of this? Because if you're in a funeral home and you're a funeral director, like, you must be getting hundreds of calls a day. How are you keeping track of that and all this stuff? And it was very interesting to be like, huh, this is all still a little bit backwards. And then to talk to the people who, you know, we had him cremated. When we picked up his ashes, I think the director or whatever of that facility, you have to sign for them and provide ID. And I think she was just taken aback when she checked her IDs and was like, wow, you're very composed. But, you know, having my sister to go through it with, I think definitely also helped. It's a little bit different with mom now, because mom's still here and mom is local to me. It was like very interesting. It was almost surreal. I can't even say that it was like, it was almost like a dream.
Yes. And so, yeah, you've touched on mum who has cancer, which is, I feel like I'm almost 40 and my sisters are a bit older. And so my parents are in their 70s and there's that aging process. And yeah, we're starting to deal with this stuff where parents pass away or they have major illnesses, or you just notice that the same as they were.
They're not 100% anymore, which, you know, that's fair.
They've lived their lives. So when was your mum's diagnosis? What happened? What was the how did this unfold?
We're just dissecting like the worst 2 years of my life. And I'm very transparent and very open book. So my mom was diagnosed with cancer in May of 2021. She lives in a Denver suburb. So she lives here. She's still working. She's in her early 60s. She actually is not the first person in our family to have cancer. I have histories of cancer on both sides of my family. My grandpa on my dad's side, so dad's dad, passed away from colon cancer before I was born. And then dad's younger sister actually had breast cancer about, at this point, it might be 20 years ago. So treatment was different then. But I remember the way they explained it was a little bit, I don't want to say shady, but they didn't fully tell us what was going on, you know, because we were quite young. And so my mom was the latest. So diagnosed in May, she went in for a routine. She has breast cancer. So went in for her routine mammogram. And they were like, oh, this is weird. We want to come have you do a different scan. And I remember I had asked her to dog sit for me while we had to go back to our first COVID wedding, during COVID wedding, because in the States, like, we're allowed to do those things now. And so I remember being at the wedding, being back on the East Coast, which is like twice as far from here as California is, and getting a text from her to our chat with me and my sister being like, okay, well, I have to go for a second scan. And the dog was very good as an emotional support dog. And I was like, Mom, dogs aren't allowed in medical facilities. He's not a service animal. And she just snuck him in there. I was like, Mom. Like, and she said the nurses loved it. I was like, yeah, but I bet they did, but they're probably going to get in trouble for that. And I was like, what is the scan for? And she was like, there was like a shadow on the mammogram. I was like, okay, way to break this over text. And so she told us when we came back that it had come back positive. And luckily it was treatable. And so her plan was surgery, chemo, then radiation. So that was May. It is now the end of October. I'm not sure when this is going out. So her surgery was in June. And she stayed with me for a few weeks after that. She decided to get a double mastectomy. I say double mastectomy because she thought she was conveying one thing to the nurse when she said mastectomy. But the nurse, obviously, when you just say mastectomy, you imagine bilateral, like one, the affected one. No, she meant both and she didn't tell the nurse. So then there was a whole hoopla around scheduling the surgery because, first of all, surgery slots right now are like super hard to come by here because they have to anticipate critical needs and healthcare in America generally sucks. And so she got that and it got pushed out, but they decided to do that after she got yet again another scan. So she had her surgery, she was recovering for a few weeks, and they're like, okay, now you're ready for chemo. And so she is on a 16-week chemo plan, so 8 times every other week with labs and white blood cell shots in the middle, which that was fun to look up. I actually think the YouTube video we found to help her figure out how to self-administer the white blood cell count was a New Zealand-based practitioner. Like the top-ranked video was someone in New Zealand. And so her last chemo appointment is next week. So my sister has been in and out. I've been the one driving her to all the chemo appointments. She can drive herself to the labs because she has enough energy in the cycle basically to do the labs, but to drive and stuff here is pretty spread out in terms of treatment. And so the labs are 5 minutes from her house. The treatment for chemo is about 30 minutes without traffic from her house. So if you can imagine driving through rush hour traffic to get there and back,
yep.
Not great. I've been her personal Uber driver for the last few months, and we've had to be extremely careful with masks and everything. And even the scheduling has been weird because her healthcare system's central scheduling system or people don't deal with an oncology ward and they don't deal with chemo infusion all the time. So they just kind of get told, you need to book a 3-hour appointment, find a slot on this. And so there was one a few months ago where it was a holiday on a Monday. And so she was going to be pushed up and the doctor and the nurses were like, you can't come back that soon for chemo because that much chemo will kill you. And so then they had to call the scheduling people back and be like, no, she needs to come in on this exact day. You need to find a spot on this exact day. And it was this whole deal. And that was the one appointment I couldn't take her to. So finding her a ride and oh man, it's been a journey. And I wasn't a driver at all. Mostly I lived in New York City for a very long time. I got a driver's license fairly late for someone who grew up in the States. And just having to deal with both my dad's stuff last year and driving my mom to chemo this year, it's all the driving I ever needed to make up for.
Yeah.
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 Now I feel a lot more confident. I guess that's the benefit.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It sounds very similar to my treatment as well. I had 8 rounds of chemo all up between August and December. I think I'm younger than your mum, so I was 37 when it happened for me. And so he gave me the most chemo that he could. And then also because apparently I responded, but this is the funny thing I find with oncologists is that those first 4 rounds were meant to be spaced out 3 weekly. After my first infusion, he called me a couple of days, said, how are you? And I said, oh, you know, I'm okay. I've got a headache. I don't feel great. He's like, great. I want you to think about doing this every fortnight. And
oh my gosh.
I was thinking, what? And I think for an oncologist, it's like, well, you're not in hospital after this. So you're
functioning enough. Your body can take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first four because she was on a AC Taxol, which I,
that's
I guess
what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first four are AC, which is this like two drug cocktail. And it's relatively quick, the infusions. Like you're in and out in a few hours. The infusion time itself is pretty short. She handled that. She was fine. Everybody was asking me, like, oh, how's your mom? How's your mom? She seems fine. I don't know what everyone's like. She actually proactively went out and she works on an army base here. Or technically it's called the Space Force. I can't make this up. And she's a cashier. And so she has access as an employee to all the things on the base. And so she, including the barbershop. So when she, like after her surgery, but before she started chemo, because there's a few weeks of rest, she wasn't working because she was on leave. She went back and she just proactively went in and was like, can you shave all my hair off? I know I'm going to leave, lose it. And they did the worst hack job ever seen. To be fair, they're not used to shaving 60 something year old ladies with hair like up to her shoulders. Like they're used to shaving or buzz cutting young 18 20 something year old service members. And she sent us a picture after and was like, what are you doing? You still have 2 weeks. She's just, yeah, it's fine, it's gonna go. Like I'd rather do it on my own terms. So she was in good spirits, and the first half was decently manageable. It was when she started the second cocktail, which, as you know, Taxol is a longer infusion. It's about 3 hours to sit through, plus all the pre-drugs and all that stuff. So it's a whole day. For us, it's a whole day affair right now. Once she started those, she was like, ah, oh, man, I'm like really feeling it. And the doctor, like you said, they're like, if you're not in the hospital and you can still manage to eat something,
you're fine.
Anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's a very interesting, I don't think I could do your job. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had exact same AC. And then I had docetaxel. And because I was HER2 positive, I started on the Herceptin and Perjeta. I don't know. They've all got weird names.
They've all got, yeah, they're all really long, weird names. Yeah.
How is she? Because my mum had cancer about 13 years ago. And it was slightly different experience. Although I resonated with me when you said mum texted me, because my parents turned up on my doorstep and basically said, oh, got cancer. And I was like, what? That matter of fact. But she had
uterine. That's a generational thing for sure.
Definitely. And you know, she didn't need chemo, thankfully, because it was in her uterus. So she had a hysterectomy and then she had radiation. But there's something I find with mums, and maybe it's just my mum, but it's very hard to take care of them. It is hard to take care of them and do things for them, even when they are, you know, incapacitated. What has it been like with your mum?
It's been interesting, I think. I'm, full disclosure, definitely suffering from a little bit of caregiver burnout at this point, because it's been a year and a half. Just back to back, both parents being the oldest. And so I think at first she was like very hesitant, but here for surgery, when you go into surgery, you need, and you're under and you're on drugs and painkillers, you're not allowed to drive yourself home. And so I remember going with her to all the appointments and making time for that, but she was still like, I'm just going to drive myself. Then I got to go to work after, very like, kind of whatever. And then I had to drive her to the surgery, and they said that the surgery, she should be out same day. She wasn't out the same day. And so having been just through this very traumatic experience with my dad, I was like having a mini panic attack when I couldn't figure out if I was allowed in or not and whatnot, and if she was awake and if she'd eaten or whatever. And so I had to grapple with that and then collected her, got to go in and get her better food than what was available on the menu. Hospital food here is not great.
Oh, it's not good and here
I thought it was just individual hospitals. No, it is across the board.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. But I always tell the story because it is slightly, people think, what? Because I'm very lucky, I have health insurance. And so we do have a public system, which is fantastic. I chose to go privately because I could. And also I had, they misdiagnosed me the first time I saw a doctor with my lump. And so I thought, I'm not mucking around with this.
No.
So I was in a private hospital when I had my mastectomy, and I had a rack of lamb for my dinner.
Okay, I know you're in New Zealand, but like, what the heck?
I was out of control. It was just like a rack of lamb.
I don't think I saw anything remotely even more appetizing than like oatmeal.
Yes.
Not in this hospital, not in the hospital that I used to volunteer at in high school. I used to be that person who would run the things back and forth, and I saw every meal and no, and I would have no, never saw a rack of lamb. And I would have hoped that, you know, there's been quite a lot of time that's passed that there'd be some innovation in what was available, but no. So I brought her some food, got kicked out because it was the end of visiting hours and she was already going to pass out again. So I picked her up the next day and she kept doing things that were driving me insane. Like she would try to pick up the dog. My dog weighs 9 pounds. But after a mastectomy, especially because she also, they found it in her lymph nodes. So they took out lymph nodes. And so your shoulder mobility, your arm mobility is not 100%. It, depending on how it goes, may not be 100% ever again. You're not supposed to lift things, at least not the day after surgery.
Yeah.
And here she is like puttering around my house in my guest room, trying to pick up the dog. And it was, I was just like, can you sit still, please? Just accept it. And it was, I think as the chemo has worn on her and it's been a few months, she's been a little more receptive to that and definitely more receptive to all pre-cooked things for her. And I'm not the best cook. So she has now opted for like frozen meals and stuff. And I'm not offended. I'm not offended. I would opt for that too. If I didn't have to eat my own cooking. It's been interesting. She's not 100% there yet with like that. For example, her last, again, with the scheduling and COVID and availability of staff and stuff, they had scheduled her last appointment. Her infusion was supposed to start at 2:30. The oncology infusion room closes at 6. And even though your infusion appointment starts at 2:30, that doesn't mean that's when they jab it. That's when the nurse, you check in with the nurse, goes and puts the order in for the meds. They check that you've taken all your pre-meds, which let me tell you, we had to go over Zantac versus Zyrtec. Two different drugs, one's for heartburn, one's for allergies. She needed both.
Yes.
The nurse was very concerned that she hadn't had, but it was like a whole deal. So she isn't getting infused until 3. And it takes 3 hours, so 3 to 6. 6 is when they close. They're not going to boot you out of there because it's an oncology ward, but they then had to point out, okay, we need you. We called them to reschedule it. They'll call you. So then they call her and they're like, okay, we can fit you in a half hour earlier, but, and they're like, big but. And you're like, you can't see the oncologist right before that because he's booked up all day already. So you need to come in the day before for that. Yeah. So she has to go in twice, which means I have to drive her twice. And I was just like, what? Why doesn't the oncology ward have their own scheduling or systems that don't let you book appointments?
Oh, I know. Yeah. This is a worldwide thing. I do feel like one of the most important messages or things that you can talk about is around that looking after yourself as the caregiver, because you've touched on that burnout. And I know with my experience, I was living by myself, but my partner saw through all of it. And I feel like often people forget about either the partner or the children or the caregiver or, you know, who's there. What have you done that has helped you, and what would you recommend to people?
I hate to sound self-serving, but I will say that using my own products, so using the clay mask in particular once a week for 15 minutes has been a practice that, and it doesn't have to be a clay mask, doesn't have to be my, like it can be whatever you want if you're caregiving, but making sure that you have a practice or routine once a week or however often you need it. I suggest like once a week to start because that's just easy to remember. Doing that and just taking 15 minutes where you don't look at your phone, don't answer anything, have it on for emergencies, but read a book, take a bath, light a candle, take a walk. Like having that set time for yourself has been super grounding for me to remind me that like I still need to take care of myself. I think also remembering that this is going to sound terrible, but I think a lot of the conventional brochures and stuff that are given to cancer patients tell the cancer patients you just rely on the one caregiver. And that, in my opinion, is terrible. But maybe it's not the same. Maybe it's just the stuff that the American Cancer Society is like handing out to hospitals here. But I read that and I was like, well, I just came out of this super painful experience. That was the case. And that was terrible. So I would not give that advice to anybody. I would make sure that as a caregiver, you have a support system too, and that the patient in question, if you're caregiving and supporting someone, has more than just you, because there's no way that like the two of you can go it alone without needing help on anything. It could be, I need help getting my laundry done, or I need help getting groceries, or the person in question needs help getting food or groceries delivered or whatever. There are so many ways. And I think a lot of us are trained, especially like of our parents' generation, to not ask for that help. And to be a sole caregiver, then you have to think about those things for someone. Like, no, get your caregiving self some more caregiving help, whether that is friends, family, your local, like if you're part of any social groups or religious groups or whatever. I'm sure if you talk around to enough people, there will be people that you can ask for help. And I would recommend that for sure. I would also say take copious notes. Like, I take down all of the medical notes on Google Docs and in my notebook. I record things when it's helpful, because there's no way you're going to remember all of it. And it is so much better to be well-informed and be able to advocate for yourself and advocate for whoever you're caregiving for, coming from a well-educated place of, you said this thing on this date to me that I needed to take this drug. Can you explain to me why? And I think we're prone to thinking that doctors and nurses are like superstar heroes who are perfect, which like they are definitely superstars. Like anybody in healthcare, I have so much respect for, but they are also human. And so they might make a mistake, or they might fat finger something on their typing or whatever. And so the only person who's going to be able to get that right and make sure you 100% understand that is like the person going through it and the caregiver who's with them the whole time. So notes and documenting it, all super helpful and super useful. And it will make your life a lot more easy when you have to ask questions, and also ask those questions, because you shouldn't be going into things just because someone said so. You would never make major life decisions just because somebody else said so. And so the same should apply to healthcare and caregiving. Don't just take it from me. Do some research, listen to other things. And the last thing I'll say is, I've heard this from another podcast actually. And when you're caregiving, make sure the people around you who are supporting you don't just ask you about the person you're caregiving for. The most common question I've been getting is like, how's your dad? How's your mom? And it just puts you in a bad spot. But if you can tell your friends or whoever you're going to, like, hey, I love that you're concerned for whoever I'm caregiving for, but sometimes I need you to just ask me about how I'm doing, because I'm under a lot of stress too. And it might feel selfish and it might feel like it's detracting from that person. But in the end, like, that person's getting all those questions too about them. And I'm sure they probably don't want you just answering for them. So make sure that whoever's supporting you knows that they're supporting you and the person going through it, not just that person, because that will save you a lot of that burnout feeling of everyone only just cares about how they're doing.
It's so true. It is. And I know, because I have been the person who's needed looking after, but you know, you watch it from that perspective as well. And I think those, all of those points are so important. And I actually think that sometimes the practical stuff is far easier in that moment, because you're in survival mode. And yeah, sometimes you're talking about how you are is obviously really important, but sometimes having people meet your basic immediate needs takes a huge amount of pressure off you. Because if you're not thinking about cooking and cleaning, or I'm going to send them a little treat because it's nice just having something special for them.
Don't send people all the cookies and cakes. No. Don't necessarily, if somebody's under a lot of stress, whether they're going through cancer and cancer treatment or they're caregiving for someone with cancer, don't ask them what they need. If you know them well enough, send them the thing that will make their day better. And it should hopefully be practical. Send them, check that they haven't cooked dinner or don't have dinner plans, send them dinner. Check that they don't have any allergies or whatever, but send them dinner, make it easy for them. So they don't ask them, what do you need from me? Because that puts the pressure on them when they're going through all this stuff. I need these, because they'll also not, I think we're all somewhat ingrained in it, and maybe women mostly, to not say what you need.
Exactly. Right? Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just Ashley. Make it easy. If you don't know the person, definitely still ask somebody around them. Yeah. If you don't know the person, I can't tell you how many candles and cookies I got, but I'm sorry. The cookies went to the community fridge or pantry. Somebody else ate them. Yeah. And the candles are still sitting in my house. And, you know, I do know some people really like candles and they enjoy that. But wow, like I would have much preferred if those people who didn't know me that well had put that money towards a good cause or yeah. something else. And now I'm just stuck here re-gifting candles.
Oh, God. Yeah, I have a lot of stuff left over, but we won't go into it. I think that there are so many valuable things in this conversation for people. Actually, whether or not it's cancer, COVID is also, you know, I feel like in New Zealand, we're probably starting to experience what you guys have already gone through. And so hearing these stories is so valuable. So thank you. Thank you for, you know, being willing to share, yeah, a really shit couple of years.
Yeah, no, you're certainly welcome. And if you have questions, if anyone has questions, I posted a lot on my personal blog right after and a few months after going through all that stuff with my dad. I haven't posted as much about my mom because it's ongoing and a lot of it's just the driving, not going to lie, but the driving, really, it takes something out of me. It really does. And, you know, if you have questions, feel free to reach out. I had quite a few people who had parents in similar situations reach out to me and say the blog post, I wrote some blog posts on what to do if your parents hospitalize and what to do when your parent dies. A lot of it, I will say, is very US-centric and dealing with some of the insurance stuff, but some of it's just common sense, like calling the hospital and stuff like that. And so those are all up on my website, adachen.co, and they'll be up. I plan on having them there forever as long as I'm paying for that website. And if you are in a similar situation and you need someone who's been there to talk to, I am always a email, contact us form, Instagram, whatever away.
That's awesome. I'm going to put all your details in the show notes and also a link to your podcast because it's the Asian Soul Collective. I love it as a sewer because I feel like I learn so much and I think this is an important dialogue, especially for white folks to listen to and sit with and consider. So I'm going to put everything in there. But thank you again. It's just been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.